In James chapter 5 and verse 16, we're told, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And of course, it's the desire of all of us that our prayers would avail much, that through prayer unto God, we would see many things accomplished in our lives and in the lives of those round about us, in the national life of our great country. We would like to see our prayers answered in great power, great manifest power of God. And we're told in James 5:16 that it is the righteous man whose prayers...
Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And this evening our guest is Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing? Jerry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, fine. Well, how's everything up there in Oregon?
Well, out in Oregon, thank God, it's peaceful, it's sunny, it's beautiful yet. We don't have any big hurricanes here at the moment, and no other disasters, and our hearts here go out to folks who are suffering under much worse conditions.
Well, I think we have so much to be thankful for here on the West Coast, and we'll just keep our fingers crossed as to what the future holds. Lots of unanswered questions, but anyway, I'm just glad most of the people are out, and most of the people are at least being cared for now.
Right.
All right, fine. Well, now, what did you want to talk about this evening?
Well, I'll tell you, Katrina certainly did bring certain things home, and you and I have talked for a long time. I've been on the radio talking to folks for years, and I've been trying to get the message across that we shouldn't suffer under the illusion, which we could argue is a delusion, that you're going to be taken care of by your government when you don't take care of yourself. And we have been trying since, I guess, 1996 to suggest to people that the writing was on the wall, that we were needing to hang on with our fingernails to the concept that we are responsible for ourselves, that we need to have the ability to be self-reliant, to be able to take care of our own food and water supplies. You know, ideas that seem foreign to folks today. So many folks believe that if you jump into your car and go down to the local 7-Eleven or other grocery store, that you are self-reliant, and nothing could be further from the truth. As a biologist, I have always been concerned about the fact that we have moved ourselves so far away from other animals with respect to taking care of ourselves in our natural environments, and we have become so dependent upon an infrastructure that is so vulnerable as a deck of cards. And this week, last Monday, in New Orleans, Mississippi, Alabama, my very worst nightmare has come true. And it is a nauseating feeling that it has come true.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting that we, of course, do carry the big Berkey and Berkey products.
Right.
And ordinarily, people really aren't too concerned. But there were so many people, you know, who saw what was happening there. And suddenly, when it was really almost too late to accomplish anything, after the horse was already gone from the bar and everybody wanted to get a big Berkey. Well, of course, it'd be weeks before it'll be there, 10 days or maybe to 2 weeks before they have it. By then, of course, the situation will be well taken care of. But the thing is, if people had it ahead of time, why, they'd be prepared, and they could have even, of course, had the water out of the filthy streets, the water running in the streets. But at least they would have had a water supply.
Right, absolutely. But now is not the time, unfortunately, for those poor folks to prepare, but there's certainly enough time for others. And Homeland Defense, for what it's worth, has suggested that people begin right now to get prepared.
Well, I think that they certainly were a disaster. In fact, it said that, you know, there were trucks trying to get in to deliver supplies. They were quite willing to give away. And FEMA just said, oh, we don't need you. And yet, of course, people, you know, were hungry. They were thirsty. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti. Pick up the story there, Jerry.
Yeah, well, to tell you the truth, after watching Katrina, you know, I have been talking for years about this food supply. We have written about food supply. It's up on our website at ARC Institute, the ARC Institute, A-R-K Institute. If you go to food supply updates there, you'll see that I've been writing for years, since 1996, about the vulnerability of our food supply. And what we have forming right here is the worst case scenario, just like the worst case scenario that was considered for New Orleans and everyone ignored. And I'm telling you now, Stan, they are ignoring this. I think folks who have been listening to us for years know that this is coming, but the truth is on the wall at this moment. Remember, I've talked to you before about the seed industry around the world concentrating to the degree that most of the global food supply is controlled by a handful of men who could stand on a patio in a backyard at a hot dog roast and control all your food. This is getting more the case day by day. This year, especially 2005 and 2004, we have had such a concentration of ownership of the global food supplies. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here with a list, a brand new report that was just released by a group that studies concentration problems in the global seed industry. And this report states that now we have 11 companies that control most of the food supply. And our good old friend Monsanto, of course, has a lion's share of that. They control $2.27 billion of sales. And seed sales, by the way, are not a huge industry, only the most important on the planet. And they have just taken over Seed, which provides over 40% of U.S. vegetable seeds. And we know what these folks are doing with these seeds. They're genetically modifying them in ways that prevent them from being able to be grown by individuals like ourselves and by small farmers to raise food for themselves and their families year after year, saving seed as they go. There is truly a global effort now to control all the food seeds around the world, to make it impossible for farmers to save their own seed, to grow their own. And I relate this directly to the Katrina problem for our listeners, because Katrina has destroyed massive amounts of ground, as you know, 90,000 square miles of ground. In addition, it has horribly polluted that ground with all kinds of chemicals.
Hold that thought right there, Jerry. We're going to have to bring other stations on board right now. All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry was simply talking about what's really happening within the food industry, and there are about 9 mega corporations that dominate the food industry, and certainly Monsanto has bought up one of the major producers of seeds for vegetables. What was that company they bought up that had about 40% of the seed market?
That was Seminese Seed, and as a matter of fact, if you go to my website, you'll see in the year 2000, I wrote, "Going, Going, Gone. Seminese Seed Company removes 2,000 seed varieties off the market." Took that out of commercial offerings, and this was where 40% of the U.S. vegetable supply came from, our seeds. Well, now to make matters even worse, Monsanto has bought Seminese. Now, Seminese was already a genetic engineering company. Now, Monsanto has bought Seminese as of this year. And now that adds this company to the massive holdings of seed companies of the entire global food supply that depends upon seed in order to be grown. And what you have here is now, again, a handful. These people, 10 of these guys, well, it'll be 11 with Seminese, 11 guys can stand on a patio in an average suburban backyard, and these are the people who control all the global food supply based upon the seeds that they engineer in order to not be able to be raised year to year, saved year to year. Just to give you an example, Monsanto's share of genetically modified crops, GM soybeans, Monsanto accounts for 91% of worldwide genetically engineered soybean crops.
And aren't most of our soybeans actually genetically engineered today?
The majority? Well, yes, a very, very large portion of them are genetically engineered. GM maize or corn, 97% of worldwide GM maize is done by Monsanto. GM cotton, 63.5%, canola, 59%, and Monsanto, I'm sorry, the U.S. grows 59% of all GM plants in the entire world, and Argentina, 20% is the closest one. The rest are very small percentages in other countries. Those are targeted by these big GM seed companies. And the reason we talk about it today and that I am particularly upset about it today is the fact that Katrina brings forth all of those fears, makes them reality. This is no longer an illusion. This is reality. It brings it forth that we are 100% dependent upon infrastructure, and that infrastructure includes all of our agriculture, all of our oil-dependent farm machinery, all of the farms that are growing this seed that must be raised every single year in order to provide food for next year's crop, when in fact, if we all had in our hands the old heirloom, non-hybrid, non-GMO seeds, like our forefathers had in their hands and foremothers had in their hands, we could raise our own food. But now look at Katrina, look at the impacts across this whole country, look at the massive drought that we have had up the whole Mississippi and Missouri River valleys, look at the new hurricane coming up the East Coast right now, just forming off the East Coast right now, and that we have half a hurricane season left to go. And then you look at the potential for the bioterrorist and agroterrorist attack that we all feel is going to happen, and I look at this, and here's my second nightmare, and that is that we will see famine in this country, in addition to the massive dislocations, economic and otherwise, that are going to result as a result of the Katrina episode.
All right. Well, I think it's important for people to understand what they're doing with the genetically modified food. Most people think that they're actually making it better. But when they put pesticides into, say, in the corn, and every kernel of corn that you eat is based upon this, putting a pesticide in there, and what happens is, well, we know what happens to the rats. The rat studies showed that it created the difficulties as far as the kidneys, as far as the white cells are concerned. We don't know what the long-range effect is upon human beings, and we are being used experimentally with this. That's the GM food, that's the BT, or where they put the toxin in, and then they have the ready Roundup ready crops, and they're doing this really without any regard at all for the health of the people who are being forced to eat this, and you have no way of knowing whether you're eating genetically modified food at all. They refuse, as they do in Europe, to allow the people to know that they're being experimented on.
Right. And there are such, you know, this story is all related. You have that whole issue of human health, and then you have the whole issue of human survival. They're inextricably linked. You must be able to have clean food, good food, with all of the God-given genetic variability and so on, and safety in the seed in order for you to have good health. But then you also have to have the ability to have the, you know, the seeding plants populated the earth for the purpose of reseeding themselves year after year to keep the earth green, to keep us in food, to produce oxygen for us to breathe, and so on. Well, here we come along with all of our narrow-minded tunnel vision focus and arrogance, and we decide we can put in a gene into these seeds that make it impossible for the seeds to germinate again. And we'll only do this in wheat, and we'll only do this in corn, and we'll only do this in carrot. But by the way, we'll produce a technology that can be put into any plant. So no matter what plant we decide to terminate its ability to make seeds in, it will be capable of doing so. And that's what we did. Unfortunately, we did that with our tax money. You and I, we contributed to our own U.S. Department of Agriculture, to Delta and Pine Land Company, with their private funds combined with our public funds. They developed the technology that created this so-called Terminator technology.
Now, why in heaven's name would they create the Terminator seeds that could not germinate? What possible advantage would there be to the farmer?
Do you hear the chain jingling in your pants? It's money, Dr. Stan. It's money, because it takes R&D time, it takes research and development in order to produce new strains of food and so on for people to eat, of course, so-called improved strains. And so they said, well, you know, at first they started just hybridizing them, crossing them so that you don't have plant A or plant B. By crossing Mama A and Papa B together, you end up with a plant, a son or daughter plant, that will end up with greater strength. You've heard of hybrid vigor. All well and good. You can hybridize in your backyard. The only problem is, if you save the seed from your hybrid, it's not going to grow only mama, only papa, or only the child. It's going to give you a whole mix of things. You may have 20 tomato plants out of 50 that give you tomatoes. The rest are going to be sterile, infertile, or they have little tiny yellow balls on instead of big fat red ball tomatoes. And so, you know, the hybridization thing was something that you could argue, okay, at least we can get back to mama and papa by growing those seeds out and know what we started with. Well, then greed stepped in, and they realized, geez, this is pretty profitable. What happens if we prevent our competitors from determining what mama and papa were? How about instead of just crossing A and B, we just put in the genes that make them ours forever? So they tried adding, and there are several seed companies that have done this, they've tried adding a single gene with their own tag on it. You know, it may be some kind of antibiotic resistance, it may be some kind of toxin. They put their own little tag on it. They put it inside every single cell. Just by putting it into one cell, it multiplies mitotically, and then you end up with all of the cells having this particular genetic trait. And then they said, now we own the species. Well, you know what? They tried it, and they won. They actually took it to court, one of these companies, and decided that it was going to be soybeans forevermore were theirs. Not God's, not man's, not anyone else's. It was theirs because they stuck one gene into it. Wow, what a profitable thing that is. Every time somebody grows a soybean anywhere in the world, unless you pay these guys off, you don't get to eat.
Well, now, of course, Jerry, this would be if you used their soybean, but can't you use other soybeans?
Well, see, that was the trick. That was the trick. They decided they were going to, and you know what, the name's going to escape me. I want to say Asgro, but I don't want to say it because I don't remember anymore. This was, 7 or 8 years ago, and the name escapes me at the moment, which company this was that did it. I should tell you that patent was awarded to that company for the entire soybean species. And it was fought in court for years. And finally, it was reversed in the European Union. It was reversed. and they no longer own the soybean species. Well, as the kids would say, no duh, you don't own the soybean species. But this is the kind of arrogance, the kind of greed that has motivated everyone here, the USDA and so on, to do this. It was to protect the business interests of corporations that have their home offices here in the United States and to provide profit. And I don't see anywhere in the Constitution that says that our government has the ability to create a profit machine inside its agencies.
But, Jerry, there's nothing wrong with a profit. It's simply when it's gotten, immorally, and when it's gotten, by playing the system so that they get an advantage, and then, of course, using government to give them a monopoly that they're really not entitled to. That is, of course, what's wrong.
Well, I'm not arguing.
Fine, but when you get it at the expense, certainly, of exploiting the system, and really what happens is these people play the system, and it's not that they make a legitimate profit. They make an illegitimate profit because they're using government to prevent competition.
Well, maybe I wasn't clear. I wasn't talking about private profit. I was talking about the USDA saw a 5% royalty or profit on this technology that they developed with our tax dollars. And I don't know of anywhere in the Constitution that says that our government has the right to enter a for-profit business at our expense.
No, and certainly not, especially when we're going to have to pay them. And then what happens to that money? Well, I suppose it goes to big bonuses to the government bureaucrats. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Jerry Guidetti from the Ark Institute. And when we get back, we'll tell you how to get in touch with Jerry to find out more about the Ark Institute, to find out what's happening to our food supply, and perhaps to begin making preparations to protect yourself and your family. All right, Jerry, go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, we're looking at here with the further concentration of the seed companies that control the world food supply. We're looking at that. We're looking at this extreme weather, as we have just witnessed in Katrina. And now we're looking at the avian influenza, which has now spread all across Russia. We now have Japan killing 1.5 million birds in the next 2 days because H5N2 has appeared in Japan. And I think you'll be very interested to know that it appears to have been artificially introduced to the chickens, to the poultry in that country.
Well, now, of course, we've been talking about H5N1, which
correct.
Is a specific... this is a different modification.
Yes.
Now, somebody has somehow modified the N gene. Why do you say that this was perhaps somehow man-introduced?
Okay, yes. As a matter of fact, there is evidence now in Japan, and they released this information themselves last night, that there is evidence that this was introduced to their chickens in a vaccine that was poorly produced. The vaccine was not legal in their country. It was apparently imported from South America and, North America and South America. It was then given to the chickens. It was not sufficiently weakened. It was a live virus, apparently, and so these chickens got H5N2. Now, it's so dangerous to everyone, because H5, as you know, doctor, is the hemagglutinin number 5, which makes it possible for these viruses to get into human cells as well as chicken cells and so on. In the case of H5N1, the N1 or neuraminidase, which has to do with the viruses getting back out of the cell after replication, that's a very deadly combination to humans, H5N1. It's becoming more so over time as mutations occur in it. The H5N2 is not as powerful, not as virulent, not as deadly in chickens even. However, the H5 is still there, which we know is bad news. If, in fact, H5N1 is introduced to Japan as it is being introduced on the wings of birds all around the world, if it combines with the H5N2, which it does in native populations all the time anyway, we might be looking at, unfortunately, a further amplification of this disease virus that is now threatening to become the pandemic organism. Well, the reason I bring this up with respect to food is top medical minds in the world, scientists, are warning. This is a huge red flag. They are warning that if indeed this pandemic hits this year, which it's looking more and more probable it's going to do, that we will not have the global food supplies that we have been assured we would always have. And once again, it comes down to the illusion that you are always going to have available to you the infrastructure and the supplies that you need for survival. If Katrina did nothing else, it brought it home to your living room that once that infrastructure is taken away by anything, in the case of the avian flu or any pandemic influenza organism, you take away 50 to 70% of your workforce. Look what happened in Katrina when 60% of the policemen walked off the job and 20% of somebody else was not there. If you take away 50 to 70% of your workforce, you won't have water, you won't have electricity, you won't have food. And this isn't just me talking. This is Dr. Osterholm, who is head of the Center for Infectious Disease.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Jerry. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti. And Jerry was just saying that over in China, pardon me, in Japan, they're going to be killing 1.5 million chickens. And why? Well, they made a vaccine for the chickens to protect them against some sort of a flu, and they didn't do a very good job. And these chickens got something called H5N2. Now, we talk a lot about the H5N1 virus, which is the avian flu virus. This was an H5N2 virus, and of course, apparently, these chickens are coming down with the illness that was introduced with a faulty vaccine. So they're going to have to go ahead and kill, what is it, 1.5 million chickens over there in Japan?
Yes, they're going to be doing that in the next 2 days. They're going to have to kill, or the nicer politically correct word is cull, 1.5 million chickens just to try to stanch this this epidemic as quickly as possible. And
this really man-made epidemic. It was made by a faulty vaccine. That's the problem.
This one was a faulty vaccine, and it was made apparently in South America and North America are the clues so far we have, and it was imported into Japan, and the farmers, the ranchers, did not have the permission to use it, but it was being brought in because everyone is trying to protect their flocks from this coming flu pandemic, and they're trying to do this inoculation thing. And some of these folks, it was like in China, they were using some really good antiviral compounds, drugs, and they were using them on animals in order to save their chickens and so on.
Was that the amantadine?
Oh, yes, amantadine,
and
correct.
Of course, what they did is they gave it to the chickens, and now, of course, then you got an amantadine-resistant virus,
yes,
so that amantadine is no longer available to give to human beings because the virus has mutated and become resistant against it. That's a rather frightening thing to think.
It surely is, and some of the viral, some of the varieties of H5N1 are still a bit amantadine sensitive. However, amantadine and remantadine are the two that it is becoming less sensitive to, and we have so many serotypes now, so many different kinds of genetic types of just H5N1, and folks are scrambling around the world to prevent, if they can, further mutations. Russia is putting out warnings every single week to Europe, telling them that we cannot stop this. I read their top virologist yesterday reported, we cannot stop this.
Now they're talking now about the avian flu that is in the birds, and those birds apparently, in fact, the Russians were actually telling people to go ahead and shoot the birds. They wanted to kill the geese because they were carrying this H5N1 virus. Was that right?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, and the ornithologists, the bird scientists are crying out, no, wait a minute. Birds have had this disease, have had these avian viruses just forever. As a matter of fact, they were carrying them just as carriers, but they weren't dying from them. Just like we get some mild flus and colds, we don't die from them, we carry them, we spread them around to each other. But what has happened is we have raised birds in such inhumane conditions, shoulder to shoulder in these horrible poultry houses, and then we've given them tons of antibiotics in order to counteract all the E. coli and everything else that they Campylobacter jejuni that they end up carrying naturally in their systems and so on. And unfortunately, we've made a breeding ground for viruses. So it goes into the domestic poultry from the wild poultry. It converts itself into something that can kill wild poultry, but it also goes into pigs, which are kind of a petri dish, if you will, or a flask, where the avian and the pig influenzas combine. And the pig, of course, has so many traits similar to ourselves, and we won't get carried away with that thought. But the truth is, we and pigs are very much alike body-wise, and the new influenzas that form inside the pig are much more adaptable to human beings. And this is why most influenzas that sweep the world come out of Asia, because the folks there live at a more subsistence level. They have chickens on their place, they have pigs on their place, they have live bird and live pig markets and so on, and there they exchange bird to pig to man to pig to bird to man, round and round it goes, and you have this really seething flask of mixed organisms. You've got combination, recombination going on, and reassortment of genes, H5N1, H5N2, H3N4, you name it, and then changes within those genes. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment or two with Jerry Guidetti, and when we actually return, we're going to have Jerry get her address out so you'll know how to reach her. The Ark Institute has all sorts of fascinating information, but it also, of course, has the hybrid original heirloom seed. So I'll let Jerry tell you a little bit more about that, but that's going to have to wait till we get back right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Terry, go ahead.
Well, I think probably I should stop talking long enough to tell folks where they can find information.
Well, why don't you wait until all the other stations are back with us? Because right now, of course, only the people who are listening to us on a certain limited number of stations will hear it. So in about 2 minutes, I'll have you tell people about, how to get in touch with the Ark Institute.
Sure.
But right now, why don't you go ahead
and
just tell us a little bit more about what's going on over in Asia today, perhaps. And I think this really is what's happening in Japan. Realize that the danger of vaccinations, if you don't have any sort of long-term follow-up on it. I mean, what happens when you take a vaccine and you put it in animals or birds or whatever it be? And of course, it creates all sorts of complications. What happens when you do the same thing with human beings?
Right.
And of course, so many of the vaccines that they give to people really have not been adequately tested. And sometimes the tests are done, but they're not valid tests. And yet, of course, we do begin these mass vaccination programs. And then we say, oh, shucks, it didn't work. We're sorry about all those people who died, as we did with the swine flu, as we did with the rotavirus, as we've done with other vaccines that have been used experimentally on large numbers of people after very, very limited trials. So pick up the story.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Fauci at National Institutes of Health has announced in the past couple of weeks that there was a vaccine available, that they have one, and that basically they thought they had about 2 million doses in this giant flask. Basically what they have is they have a primitive or rudimentary vaccine that has created an immune response in the few people it was tested in, but the response required 12 times the normal dose of this vaccine in order to get this response. And mind you, the body has never seen H5N1 before. And so you'd expect that it would have this hideous response. Well, as it turns out, he got a response. That's what you want. You wanted to have a response to a dead vaccine, a dead virus vaccine, and then you want folks to form antibodies against it and so on. Well, it's going to take 12 times the amount of antigen of normal flu vaccine, and it's going to have to be given in two shots, a booster shot afterwards. So what we end up having is we've got a flask with a primitive or starter vaccine in it that would only be able to serve 440,000 people here in the United States. It's not even a vaccine yet. We have to see what the pandemic strain is going to look like we have a starter here, but we've got to see what the pandemic strain looks like.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought right there, Jerry, as we bring our stations right on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, of course, is Jerry Guidetti. Jerry, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners, you know, how they can get in touch with the Ark Institute, learn more about the seeds that you carry, and the other things that are available at the Ark Institute. And I know you have a book, which you sent me a copy of. Tell us how to save seeds, how to, you know, be able to prepare for next year's crop as well.
Sure. And there's no time like the present. Absolutely. First of all, if you go to our website, ARK, we're a botanical Noah's Ark, ARKInstitute.com. Go to the food supply updates, tap that button, and you'll check out all of the food supply issues and so on that we've been talking about for years. Read about the non-hybrid seeds, the ones that you can save year to year yourself to grow your own food. There is no time like the present because we are going to have seed shortages. We're already starting to see that with these non-hybrids. We don't know how long our farmers are going to be able to grow these things without contamination and so on. So check those out. There's a book called Seed Sowing and Saving. It teaches you how. It's so user-friendly. It's so easy to do. It teaches you how to take your own seeds from your own tomatoes, save them, from your own peppers, save them, and so on. We suggest, and we always have said this, and we mean it from our hearts, buy seeds once, take them, multiply them in your own garden, and give them away. You don't have to come back to the Ark Institute or anybody else ever again to buy seeds if you buy a collection, because you will have seeds forever. All you need to do is learn how to do that, save your seeds. And it's so simple. Scrape tomato seeds out and so on. It's easy to do. Even if you only were to raise four or five different seeds a year, different plants a year, and put the rest in your freezer, we even provide you with all the instruction how to do that, put them in your freezer, you would have seed for years. We look at the, let me give you a phone number, 1-800-255-1912, 1-800-255-1912. Again, it's ARK, A-R-K, Institute.com. So we recommend that folks take seriously, just think about this hurricane. We have known, our government has known forever that this is coming. They prepared that city for a Category 3, and yet they knew that sooner or later we'd have a Cat 4 or 5. Then when they knew it was coming, they still failed to give them water or food for 4 to 5 days. Now picture this situation when the crops get wiped out. Next year's seed crops get wiped out in the United States, in South America, where a large portion of our seed is produced. Or the oil gets wiped out, as it has been wiped out to a large degree, the capacity out of the Gulf, and now we are begging oil from foreign countries. And picture you trying to feed your family over the long term, not just the short term. I personally, what I have done, Stan, is we provide for canned food for our family. We can our own out of our own gardens because it's healthy, it's non-GMO, it's organic. We can our own, we freeze our own. Then I buy additional dehydrated food if I don't have enough to dehydrate tons of it myself. That dehydrated food is the long-term stuff for the absolute emergency that I would have to backpack things out or put things in a vehicle and take them out of this house and evacuate. At least I'd have dehydrated food. We have water filters. I think I need to do a bit of a public service here, too, with respect to those wonderful Berkey water filters. I know you know all about those. And we need to tell folks that they do not remove viruses. They remove protozoans. They remove bacteria. However, you can get rid of the viruses by putting chlorine bleach in the water. It kills the viruses off, and then these beautiful Berkey or British Brookfield water filters do take out the chlorine. So you've got the best of both worlds. If you were in a situation like those poor people down in New Orleans, 90,000 square miles of contaminated land, water, wells, you name it, you would have to be in a position to protect yourself, and these water filters will do it. So having done that service, we can go on with seeds. do plan, if you're a gardener, to at least double your garden this year, for your neighbor's sake, for your family's sake, for your own sake. And please save the seed, and please give it away to friends and neighbors so that you spread this good stuff around, because it's disappearing. It's all disappearing. I've said that to you privately, Stan, before. The seeds are going away.
And I think that's really so interesting that we find these giants like Monsanto buying up the people who have been putting out the seeds in competition with them. And soon you're only going to have one or two major corporations that will control the seeds for the entire world. And that's really a rather frightening thing to contemplate, because what happens if they modify this and they put something in there that's harmful to us? Where would we get our food? And it would appear that the government, and it was working very closely with Monsanto in Europe, why the people don't want genetically modified food, and they insist that it be put on the package. Here, they're not allowed to put this on the package. They're not allowed to let you know that you are getting genetically modified corn and genetically modified cottonseed oil and genetically modified canola oil and genetically modified, soy and corn products. These are frightening things that are happening without the average person having any idea what's really taking place.
Right, absolutely right.
And I admire for our listeners the wonderful book entitled Seeds of Destruction by Jeffrey Smith, and I know you know the book.
Right.
I think that Jeffrey's done a wonderful job of getting information, trying to wake the American people to the very real danger to our food supply.
Right. It certainly is a danger to the food supply. And again, this is a multifaceted danger. It is not only that the food is being contaminated with a large number of untested toxins. We are the pigs. We are the guinea pigs. We are the rats. We are the caged mice. We're the ones upon which it is being tested. And you know why it's successful? Why they get away with it? Because there is no smoking gun. We eat such varied diets of, well, most people eat varied diets of junk, junk type foods, and in it is a whole test tube full of bits of this chemical, that chemical, the other chemical. And I'm talking artificial chemicals, not natural biochemicals that are in all food. Everything is composed of chemicals, everything's composed of molecules, but I'm talking the artificial stuff, the toxins that don't belong in human bodies, rat fat genes, for example, or the cri9 protein, for example, that doesn't belong in our food, the Bacillus thuringiensis toxins in its various forms varieties.
That's the pesticide that kills the caterpillars
when
they put it in there. And they say you've got nothing to worry just because we're putting this in every kernel of corn.
Absolutely.
And then they actually hid their scientific studies, and when they were finally forced to reveal what they showed, they said there's nothing to worry about, and people have looked at this study and said, there's a lot to worry about.
And, oh, yes.
And, of course, what it did, I mean, they had these rat studies, and these rats were not normal. They kept trying to say they were normal, but even their own study showed that there were definite physiological effect of this pesticide on the rats. What's it going to do to human beings? Well, we'll find out 20 years from now, like they did after they gave the stilbestrol to pregnant women who were threatening miscarriage. And they, we'll give you the stilbestrol, you're not going to abort your child. And then 20 years later, the daughters of these women who got the stilbestrol had cancer of the vagina and the vulva.
Right. It's a very horrible thing. And, you know, it's interesting. I know two people who are near and dear to me who had kidney cancer. And it's very interesting that this corn... the corn experiment that they did showed kidney changes, hypertrophy of the kidney, in some of these rats. And you know, you stop and say, my gosh, is it possible that all of this stuff is causing the increases in cancer, especially kidney cancers, for example? Well, again, there's no smoking gun. Science is cause and effect. They can sit back and say, oh, it wasn't our corn. Oh, it wasn't our beans. It must have been something else. And maybe they're right. But who knows? Because we drink and eat chemical cocktails every single day. So finding the one component that is responsible for a particular disease flare-up or cluster in any one community is very, very difficult, as you know. That's why we have double-blind, controlled, placebo-controlled studies and so on. So we eliminate all of the variables except for the one thing that you are varying, And in order for us to test this on humans, it would mean that we'd have to eliminate all of the other variables except, for example, the crinine protein and see what effect it would have on humans. But as you know, because of the Starling corn fiasco, they themselves said that that particular concentration of that toxin, that insecticide in the corn, was not approved for human consumption, but only dairy cattle and meat animals. Now, so is it not going into the animals that we are then eating? But then the other thing it points out is that they were aware that it was not a safe level for humans. And so what they do, they put it out as feed corn, shipped that corn all over the world. It went on down to Mexico. Those people saw that and says, wow, look at those big kernels, and they started growing it. And it was blowing in the wind up here in the United States. And they said all you have to do is put about 50 feet of regular corn around it to trap the pollen, to keep it from contaminating your other fields. Well, I have never heard anything so stupid in my life, excuse me, because if you've ever stood in a field of corn on a windy day and watched the pollen, you know that it doesn't go just 50 feet. It goes miles on the wind.
Well, I think it's so important for our listeners to realize that if a child from another country, from Mexico or South America, comes to the United States, they're usually very healthy, but after they've been here for a short time, they begin to develop all sorts of health problems,
yes.
Just like our children. One in six American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. One in six American children has asthma. The incidence of juvenile diabetes, which was very, very rare, is beginning to increase and increase very, very rapidly.
Right.
Heart disease for the elderly, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, cancer. All of these things are increasing in our society. And the government says, gee, we have no idea what's happening, but we can assure it's not the vaccines, it's not the food, because we're here to help.
Right.
And I would like to suggest that this may not be what's really going on. I believe that there really are wicked and evil people out there, and I think that they know exactly what they're doing because they've done this research many, many years ago. And one of the things, of course, we know that some of these types of genetically engineered corn, when fed to pigs, suddenly the male pigs become sterile. Why is it the sperm level in American males has fallen almost 50% over the last 20 or 30 years? Could that be the result of some mass diabolical experiment on us? And who is there to help us? Can we depend upon the government to look after us like the people in New Orleans did?
I'll tell you, again, it is now, I would consider it delusional for anyone to believe that they are being looked after, not only in terms of their food supply, but in terms of every other aspect of your needs. As a matter of fact, it's almost sad to say, but I don't think that they even realize how totally incompetent they are to handle the problems that arise after a catastrophe. I can only thank God for one thing as a result of this, and that is that this was a natural disaster, and this wasn't a disaster caused by an enemy. We at least knew this one was coming, and maybe for this one, we were slightly better prepared than we will be for the bioterrorist attack, the agro-terrorist attack, the nuclear attack that they keep telling us is going to happen, just like they knew New Orleans was going to happen one day, too.
Yeah,
and the reality is, how will they respond? Probably worse than what you saw today.
And I think what's really so interesting, the MSNBC put out a report saying that they had actually had a practice a year ago for just what happened. And, of course, one of the things were they had, I think, 200 or 300 or 400 school buses. They were to be used to evacuate the people who didn't have other means of evacuation. That was the plan. But
right.
Somebody forgot to use the school buses. And then they were supposed to call in the State Guard, the National Guard.
Right.
But they were all set to come, but they didn't get the call. And the question is, why didn't they evacuate the people who couldn't get out otherwise?
Right.
Why didn't they call in the State Guard and maintain law and order? Why did they let things get totally out of hand? And, well, they say they're going to have a federal investigation that'll take 6 months or a year to figure out what's going on. But, of course, are they really going to tell us the truth about what happened? This was the obligation of the governor and she did not call in the National Guard. They were waiting for days before they were called in. And how could you do something this foolish unintentionally? Was this a gigantic experiment? We may never know what really happened, but we do know that they had a plan, they knew what to do, and somebody forgot to use the school buses. Of course, they eventually got trapped underwater. Somebody forgot to call in the National Guard. Oh, shucks, well, we did a copter a couple of days after there was lawlessness, after 200 police officers had quit, after two police officers committed suicide. Here was an example of something that everything went wrong, but we don't know really whether it was intentional or stupidity. But are we going to trust our lives with these people? That's why I think what Jerry is saying is so vitally important. You've got to start thinking about looking after yourself.
You are your own Department of Homeland Defense and Security. You really need to take care of your water supply, your food supply, your energy supply, or at least enough clothing to cover your body under bad circumstances. Please look at the long term of food. You can't say that you haven't heard this before. Anyone who's listened to me talking for all of these years, you know that I've been rather upset over the fact that I see the writing on the wall that the food supply is in jeopardy. They knew about that in New Orleans. They didn't do anything about it. I'm telling you, it's going to happen here. We are needing, seriously, since we have no control over this, the seed companies control our government, plain and simple, they do. It's a revolving door from our U.S. Department of Agriculture, Food and Drug Administration, and so on, into these big chemical, ag, and pharmaceutical industry companies. They're all combined. It's not going to happen. They're going to keep going at this willy-nilly engineering food and so on, preventing the seed from being grown by average people. You're needing to get non-hybrid seed, heirloom seeds that you can grow yourself, and I ask you to multiply them, to give them away as gifts to as many people as you can. You will never have to buy a seed from us or anybody again. 1-800-255-1912 or arkinstitute.com, A-R-K, institute.com, and you can get all kinds of information about the food supply, seeds, and so on. Thank
okay,
you,
hold
Dr.
That, hold that thought right there, Jerry. We'll yeah. be right back in just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti. Jerry, we've got about 3 minutes before I have to let you go.
Uh-huh. Well, God bless everyone in the Gulf States, and I do hope everybody will open their hearts and their wallets to help those folks out. We are ready and willing to send seed to that area when those folks get back up on their feet and are able to grow gardens again. It is certainly a situation where they know now, as we hope all of you are learning, you cannot depend on the infrastructure to be there. We need to turn the clock back in many ways and begin to learn how to care for ourselves again. Third world countries will do better than we will at taking care of themselves after major catastrophes. And the unfortunate thing is we are likely to see more of this even this year, maybe even terrorist attacks on top of it. We are in trouble. We would ask folks, please, to get a water filter to purify their water supplies. Get some non-scented chlorine bleach in to further purify their water supply to kill the virus parts of it, and then let your water filter take it out. To get your non-hybrid seeds in so that you can take care of yourself this coming year, the year after, and forever to feed yourself. Get some food in the house, no less than 3 months. If you can't afford 3 months of the food you like to eat, just get the food in the house that'll keep you alive. You know, get rice, get beans, and so on. Get as much pop-top canned things, remember a can opener, canned goods to take with you if you have to evacuate, because as you saw, you may have to evacuate. Don't think it can't happen to you. It can happen to you. And in this day and age, there's a good probability it will.
Well, I think it was really so interesting that they had a mandatory evacuation, but they didn't force people to leave. Could you imagine if, wherever you live, if suddenly the local government said you will have to leave your home, whether it be because of an epidemic, whether it be whatever the cause might be, the government has the ability to force you to leave your home. Now, certainly the people in New Orleans were who got out initially were far better off than those who stayed behind, but we live in a very unusual world. I think the world we grew up in no longer exists. Jerry, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you here as a guest here at Radio Liberty. One more time, your telephone number and your website.
It's 1-800-255-1912, and the website is ARK Institute.com.
Okay, fine, Jerry. Thank you so very
much.
God bless. Appreciate it for you being with us. Good night.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. Jerry Guidetti does help Radio Liberty. She's one of our supporters, and we hope you will want to be as well. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Now, if you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, our newsletter is... We have things on all different subjects, but I would suggest you right now that if you'd like to understand who really runs the world, the Occult Hierarchy, Part 1, or the Occult Hierarchy, Part 2, that's the May and June Radio Liberty letter, and you can certainly get those on the Internet at www.radioliberty.com. If you don't have access to the net or you'd like to get a free copy of either one of those two newsletters, then I suggest perhaps the Occult Hierarchy Part 2. Although you may find the information very, very difficult to believe, I would simply ask you to check the facts, to check the books we refer to, written by people who are in contact with the other dimension. And there really is another spiritual dimension there, and there are people who are in contact with it, and there are people who write books about their contact with it, and about the people who rule the world that, of course, they have contact with. So if you're interested in getting the information, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to perhaps go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can listen to our news, our programs, 5 hours a day, either directly at radioliberty.com or by linking to our other internet sites at GCN Live, that's GCNLive.com, or AmericaNewsNet.com for our early morning program. And then we have a number of programs there that are archived, and you can listen to those as well. Now, if you listen 5 hours a day and then you listen to the archives, you're not going to get very much accomplished, but you'll learn an awful lot. And we actually have some people who do listen 5 hours a day, because they're going to get information that they're not going to get elsewhere. So your job, if you'd like to help us, would be to tell other people about our programs, to pull down our newsletters, and you have our permission to copy those newsletters and distribute those newsletters on any subject you want to, and whether it be the background of 911, whether it be on genetic engineering, whether it be on population control, or worldwide genocide, because there really is worldwide genocide that's going on, whether it be on water fluoridation, whether it would be on certainly the spiritual aspect of what's going on, or even the difference between a republic and a democracy. Go to www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. Pull down the newsletters. Copy the newsletters, study the newsletters, and then utilize that information to try to determine if what we're saying is true. Because if what we're saying is false, you have nothing to worry about. But if what we say is true, then your future, your family, why, your freedom are under attack today. And remember, the truth of the matter is we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological and cultural battlefield, because behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty. And we'll... Well, Martin Luther wrote, "A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper he, amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe doth seek to work his woe. His craft and power great, and armed with cruel hate on earth, is not his equal. Did we in our own strength confide, our strivings would be losing. We're not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is he. Lord Sabbath is his name. From age to age the same, and he must win the battle." Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And this evening we have Irvin Baxter, who writes the Bible in the News, and several of my listeners had suggested you've got to get him on because he's really can begin to tie things together, not only from what's happening in certainly in everyday life and the news we read, but how this all ties into the scriptural background of what's happening. So, without further ado, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Stan. It's nice to be with you.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners who really don't know you a little bit about you and how it happened that you have a radio ministry as well, don't you?
Yes, I do. We're on daily 1 hour. We have a program called Politics and Religion, the two things you're not supposed to talk about.
Well, I'm glad you are, because that's just about what we talk about. So, tell us what your take is on what's going on in the world today.
Well, that's a big subject, as you know, Stan. We specialize in the prophecies of the Bible and how they're being fulfilled by current events. And so there are many facets to what's going on. We're moving toward one world government right now. We're also watching the emergence of a national ID, which will soon move into a global ID system, which will fulfill the prophecies concerning the coming mark of the beast. We're also watching the war develop along the Euphrates River. The Bible prophesies that a terrible war will come out of the area of the Euphrates River. Of course, most of the Euphrates is in Iraq. And so when you look at the overall gamut. The other major development right now is the unification of the religions of the world, first of all by the ecumenical movement, and then beyond the ecumenical movement is interfaithism, where Muslims, Christians, and all other religions of the world are attempting to bring about a global spirituality. These things are all prophesied in the Bible as well, so it's actually emerging from every aspect of life.
I certainly agree with you, and it, so much of what's going on over in Iraq really doesn't make sense. I mean, how would you do such a poor job of, going into the country, which, we are taken within just a relatively few days, and then do everything wrong? I mean, disband the army, fire many of the policemen, fire many of the civil servants, fail to stop the looting, suddenly we see total chaotic situation over there, and we are going to be there for many years. Our boys are not coming home, and it really doesn't make sense unless there is another force that is energizing what's going on. And I'm sure you recognize that God's hand is in everything that's going on over there, and you recognize, of course, the sovereignty of God in directing the course of the kings of this world.
Well, there's a prophecy in Revelation chapter number 9 and verse number 13, and it specifically speaks of a war that will start from the Euphrates River, and it says that the result will be the killing of one-third of mankind. Now, if that means literally what it says, you're talking about a horrific prophecy. A third of mankind is 2 billion human beings. We had 8 million killed in World War I. We had 52 million killed in World War II. And if we are in fact headed for a war that's going to kill one-third of mankind, if that scripture means literally what it says, then you can understand why everything is going backwards in Iraq, because it's headed downhill fast, and it's going to be a terrible outcome before it's over. It appears to me.
Our Hold That Thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Evan Baxter right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Evan Baxter. We're talking about what's really going on in the world today. And if you're looking for logic, there's very little logic there. If you analyze very carefully how we got into this war, in the Middle East, you have to understand it was planned long before that. And I believe that men believe that they know exactly what they're doing. And there's so many agendas out there. I mean, there's people, there's the internationalists have an agenda, and the communists have an agenda. And I believe that people from the dark side within what I call the occult hierarchy have an agenda. But God has an agenda as well. What would you think about that interpretation of what's going on?
Well, I absolutely believe that. Unless we understand the prophecies of the Bible, I don't think what's going on in the world right now makes any sense whatsoever. And some of the things that we should not do are the very things that make a lot of sense. For example, if we're going to stop the problem of terrorism, then it makes a lot of sense to give everyone a national ID so that we can have a database on every human being, follow what they're doing. It all makes wonderful sense until you read Revelation chapter number 13, where it says that that's the very system that will ultimately enslave the entire world. Once you see that, then you say, we can't go down that road, and yet that's the exact road that even our government is taking us down right now.
And that, of course, is where every man will, have to wear the mark of the beast or be known by the number of his name, and you won't be able to buy or sell, and yet you have this this identification.
When we look at what the United Nations does, they're already using a system very much like this, only they're using it on a national scale. The first weapon against any nation that does not bow the knee to international edicts is economic sanctions. We won't buy and sell with you if you don't do certain things. And then, if that doesn't work, the next action is military action. So you can already see this being implemented on a national scale. The Bible prophesies that with the computerization of all of society, that it ultimately will be exercised on an individual scale as well.
And, of course, we see this move to number everybody in this country. And they really have it. They have vast databases on all of our citizens, and they're not going to admit this because it's illegal, but these people really don't care whether it's illegal or not. Did you ever see that a logo for the DARPA, Admiral Poindexter's organization, which of course showed the pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye, glorified eye, of course, looking out over the world? They had that up on the internet for a time, for a few days, and then there was just an outcry to see a satanic symbol on the internet representing one of our... Well, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment, right here at Lady. Well, our guest this evening is Irvin Baxter, and Irvin Baxter, we're talking about the things that are going on today, and I was just asking if Irvin Baxter had actually seen this logo that was on the internet. It was from DARPA, the defense, one of the defense and intelligence agency subdivisions, and it was a circle, and within that was a pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye we see on the back of the dollar bill. And the eye is glorified, of course, and it's looking out over the world. And this is obviously a satanic symbol, where, of course, the eye of Lucifer, which is what that eye above the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill represents. The eye of Lucifer is looking out all over the world. And this was the Total Information Awareness Organization. And they were going to collect dossiers on everybody. Well, of course, when the information got out, why, there was quite an outcry in America. And Admiral Poindexter was transferred somebody else. But I believe this sort of thing is really going on, don't you?
Well, I do believe it's going on. Of course, the biggest thing has been done openly and is already enacted into law. To me, the largest leap toward the mark of the beast in the last, well, since the founding of our nation, all started, it actually happened on May the 11th of this year. That's when President Bush signed the Real ID Act, which is now in law that every American will have to have a national ID come 2008. So we're 3 years away right now. It's already passed into law. Every person will get a national ID card. Without it, you don't drive. Without it, you don't get on an airplane. You don't go on a train. You will not enter a federal building. You probably will not open a bank account, and you probably won't buy or sell. Now, this is scheduled to take force 2008 unless we're able to reverse that trend.
And, you know, I think it's so interesting, the way they were able to sell this to Congress was they said, well, this is how we're going to control illegal immigration. Now, the government could have controlled illegal immigration long ago. But, you see, they wanted to create a problem. And by creating a problem, and, of course, flooding our country with illegal aliens, and then, of course, doing everything they could to block efforts to try to get rid of them. For instance, if you're picked up as a illegal alien, you're taken into a court, and they say, well, we're going to give you, you've got to come back here in a month for a hearing, and we're going to let you go out on your own recognizance. You don't have to put up bail. You know, you just come back here, and then we'll think about deporting you. Now, isn't it amazing about 99% of the illegal aliens who get picked up under those circumstances don't show up for their hearing? How could you do anything that stupid unintentionally? But they've created the problem in free medical care, and you can get access to all sorts of social welfare benefits and education for your children and subsidies for your college education. You create the problem to draw the people in from south of the border, and then the solution is, well, a national ID card for all law-abiding American citizens. It should be so obvious to the American people what they're doing, but I don't think the average American understands. Do you?
No, they don't. And, of course, as this darkness descends upon the world, the only antidote to darkness is light. And that's the reason we do what we do, and I'm sure, Stan, this is the reason you do what you do. We're attempting to shed the light every day, and we also have a magazine called End Time Magazine, in which we take the prophecies of the Bible and say, this is what the Bible says. This is the way it's being fulfilled right now by current events. That's what we're trying to do, because it's only if people get their eyes open to the light that the darkness that's enclosing upon America right now can be dispelled.
And, of course, hopefully in the process with what you do and what I do, at least some people who perhaps don't have a personal relationship with the Lord will begin to see the pattern that's there and begin to understand where we're headed. And, of course, when you begin to recognize the evil that's out there, some people, at least, will begin looking for the solution, and they're not going to find it in politics. They're going to find it in a personal relationship with our Lord. You know, do you find that's true?
Yes, politics is Satan's method of ruling the world, and the true Church of Jesus Christ is God's method of ruling the world. That's the reason that over and over again we are disappointed with politicians and political solutions. They simply do not have the answer for our time. Only Jesus Christ and his kingdom has the answer.
And because this is how I happened to come to the Lord. It was 42 years ago when I suddenly realized what was going on in the world. And, you know, when you suddenly recognize the enormity of what's going on, it's just totally devastating. And then, of course, you begin looking for answers, and you realize behind everything is this spiritual battle that has been here since the beginning of time.
Well, you know, when you look at what's going on, not only politically but religiously, I think it was Mikhail Gorbachev that said that there are three things that must happen to establish a new world order. There has to be a one-world government, a one-world economy, and a one-world religious system. And right now, the leaders of the world are turning to the one-world religious system because they believe they've gone together, they've drawn the world together as far as they can using politics, that a deeper value in people's hearts is their religious values. So until you alter what people believe, you can't really take them to that total point of control. You have to bring about a unity of belief. Well, that's where a lot of effort is being put right now. We're watching the ecumenical movement, trying to bring all of the Christian denominations together. And of course, that would be a good thing if it were being done on the basis of truth, but it's being done on the basis of compromise. And then they're going beyond that with the establishment of the United Religions in the world, and the efforts to, at the United Nations level, to establish a global spirituality. You can just see what the Bible prophesies, not only a political leader, the Antichrist, but a spiritual leader, the false prophet, moving the world toward this one world religion, one world economic system, and one world governmental system. And we're much further down the pike, I think, than most people realize we are.
Well, I have no question at all about that. Well, how do you see this new movement that's sweeping the evangelical Christian church, or the Protestant church? It's called the Church Growth Movement, where we're trying to get more and more people into the church, trying perhaps to accommodate to what people want rather than adhering to the scriptures. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, if we just have a crowd, that's not a church. And I think it's critical that we don't make the church in the image of the world, but we're truly doing the work of Jesus Christ when we make the world to be transformed into the image of Jesus Christ himself. So I think most of what's happening today, we're trying to take a poll, find out what people want, and then give it to them. It's mass marketing. Now, I'm all for church growth. I'm sure you are as well. I would love to see every person in America become a true Christian. At the same time, if we just give people enough religion to vaccinate them against the real thing, then we probably have done them more harm than good.
And I certainly, never having talked to you before, I was sure that you would take that position. Of course, you see the things it's so much as I do, and really, there are just a small group of people out here that have the unique privilege of being on radio and talking to people all across America. How can people actually get to your programs?
Well, we are on several stations around the country, and we have a radio log showing where we're on daily. If you want to go to our website, endtime.com, that's endtime.com. We also have a magazine that a lot of people enjoy subscribing to. It comes out bi-monthly, and it's called End Time Magazine. And we also have our phone number, which is 1-800-END-TIME. So if you can remember the word End Time, E-N-D-T-I-M-E, it's endtime.com, 1-800-END-TIME, as an End Time Magazine. Any of those things can direct you to our program, and it is heard daily on the web for those areas of the world where we're not actually on a radio station that can be heard in a given area. So we also have a course called Understanding the End Time. And, Stan, I feel so passionate about this, that people have to really understand. You know, it's one thing to give bits and pieces and people sort of know something's wrong but not able to nail it. We have put together this, it's 10 lesson, 12-hour course called Understanding the End Time. We prove where the United States of America is in the Bible. We show where other modern nations are specifically mentioned in Scripture, which of those nations will be the main participants in the coming one-world government. We talk about Israel's future and what's going to happen there, and the emergence of the world government, the Antichrist, the false prophet, and we try to do it in layman's language so the average person really can understand. So that's what we're all about, and that's what we try to do.
Well, let's get some of your ideas. Where is Israel? Where does Israel stand in everything that's going on? Because some people say that, you know, this is the reconstitution of ancient Israel. Some people say, no, this is just has nothing to do with God's prophecies and God's promise to the Abraham. Of course, that was transferred to the Christians when they were grafted into the Old Testament scriptures. So where do you feel that the modern state of Israel fits in, and what is going on in Israel today as we are, America is doing everything they can to force Israel to abandon the land, certainly to pull their people out of Gaza, which really doesn't make any sense, and yet there has to be a purpose behind it. So I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, this is such an important question. Ezekiel 37 is devoted to the rebirth of the nation of Israel. And it's very critical that people know that that is a prophecy. It says it will happen in the latter days. It now has happened. The nation has been reborn. And yet that prophecy is not totally finished yet. We're right now watching a sovereign enactment of Bible prophecy with the rebirth of the nation of Israel. The Lord said, I will bring them from the north, the south, the east, and the west, where I have scattered them. He scattered them because they rejected their Messiah. He drove them into exile because of this worst of all sins that happened. And yet, he said, I will gather you back, and not only will I bring bone against bone, but I'm going to put muscle on the bone, and then I will put flesh on the muscle, and then I will put my breath in you. Now, his breath is his spirit. That hasn't happened in Israel yet.
Right, for many of the people there, I really don't even believe in the God of the Old Testament.
That is true, they don't at this time. However, there's a great revival coming. The scripture is very clear that it's coming.
I'm sure there is, and I'm sure these will be a Christian revival, in Israel among the Jews. So these are exciting times. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest and get his take on so many of the things that are going on. Those of you who listen to the program know what I feel. Well, I want to know what Irwin Baxter feels. So we're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let's pick up the story of Israel. How do you view what's happened as far as forcing the people who have been in Gaza? Some of the people have been there for 50 years or more. I mean, they were born there. The Jews started moving into the Gaza area back in the 1940s. Some of them even before the 1948 war. So why in heaven's name would the United States put pressure on Israel to get them to withdraw from Gaza, to get them to take the 8,000 or 9,000 Israelis that were living there, who've lived there under siege for a long period of time, but this was their home, this is where their businesses were, this is where their greenhouses were, this is where they were producing food. Why would we try to force them out of that area?
Well, because we right now are participating in setting the stage for the fulfillment of the prophecies of the end time about Israel. The Bible teaches that the area of Judea is going to be the focal point of the greatest tribulation that has ever happened. Jesus said in Matthew 24:15-16, when you see the abomination of desolation, which is when the Antichrist will stand on the temple claiming to be God, when you see that event, then let those which be in Judea flee. Judea is not Israel. There's Israel and there's Judea. Judea is the West Bank. It's what they call the occupied territories. And apparently, Ariel Sharon is not finished withdrawing. He just withdrew from Gaza, which he should not have done, because it is specifically described as part of the Promised Land. When God gave that promise to Abraham 4,000 years ago, Gaza was part of the Promised Land, and that's God's covenant with Abraham forever. Right now, though, Ariel Sharon does not trust in the God of Abraham. He fears George Bush and the United Nations more than he fears God, and that's the reason he's doing what he's doing. He believes that if he builds this security wall from the northern tip of Israel to the south, that he can withdraw and get a better deal than Ehud Barak could get, than Benjamin Netanyahu could get. He can withdraw from behind the security wall. President Bush has already given him a letter saying, we know you'll have to keep some of the lands captured in 67 because there are such huge concentration of Jewish people there. So he waves this letter and says, look, I'm going to be able to keep Male Adumim, I'm going to be able to keep Gush Etzion and Ariel, And consequently, you should be very happy, even though we're going to have to withdraw from Gaza. So we withdrew from Gaza. Now they're going to end up withdrawing from the West Bank. And Sharon's already said that. We will still have to withdraw from some of the West Bank because the international community has put together a peace plan for Israel. It's called the Roadmap for Peace. And when the World Summit happens in about a week and a half at the United Nations, Kofi Annan has called a new meeting of the quartet which put together the Roadmap for Peace. So now we have an international agreement on the Middle East. The Bible prophesies the Antichrist, the international leader of the world, will make an international agreement on the Middle East. It looks like that's what we're watching happen right now. Now, if this, in fact, is the confirmation of the covenant, that means we could see the beginning of the final 7 years because that is the singular event that triggers the final 7 years to Armageddon. They're literally flirting with this at the United Nations World Summit, September 14 through 16, and they already have announced the meeting.
All right, well, I think that these really are exciting times. As you see these things unfolding, if they don't make any sense, why, you can only then look at it from a prophetic and from a biblical point of view, and then everything begins to make sense because we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, the thing is, you know, as we move into what lies ahead, you know, and of course, if the Antichrist does then go to the temple, but the trouble is, there is no temple, so what can happen then?
Well, Dr. Stan, I believe that Sharon is going to say to the international community and to George Bush, you want me to withdraw from the West Bank and give all this land back, and yet Israel does not even have its number one holy site. The Muslims have their number one holy site in Mecca, their number two holy site in Medina. The city of Jerusalem is only claimed as their number three holy site. We Jews don't even have our first holy site. We are willing to allow the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque to stay there. We want to build our temple north of the Dome of the Rock. We want to share the Temple Mount. Now, President Clinton, when he was negotiating with Sharon and Arafat, no, pardon me, with Barack and Arafat in the year 2000, when they came to the Temple Mount, they could not agree. And Clinton said, let's just share it. We'll put it under UN control. We'll be able to share it. Well, once the Temple Mount is placed under UN control, then that explains why the international leader of the world will stand on the Temple Mount saying, I am sovereign here, I'm in control here, which is what the Bible says he will do. It looks like the table is all being set in the negotiations right now. Furthermore, I was just in Israel in May, and all of the furniture and all the utensils that are going to be needed for the reestablishment of temple worship are now completed. I saw them all with my own eyes. I saw the brazen altar. I saw the brazen laver. I saw the candlesticks, the table of shewbread, the altar of incense. I saw all that they're going to need in order to reestablish temple worship. They are ready right now.
But they need one thing. They need the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, you know, that's a point of great discussion. They did not have the Ark during the Second Temple era. Now, I was at the Temple Institute, and the guy that took us through there last year said they're now talking about building a new ark, because even if they found the old one, it would be so decayed and dilapidated that it wouldn't really fit into the new temple. She indicated that they were actually going to start a fund drive to build a new Ark of the Covenant, but I don't think they have to have that to reinstitute temple worship because they never did have it in the Second Temple era.
Well, of course, Marie Strong built an ark. They call it not the Ark of the Covenant, but the what is it, the Ark of Hope or something of the sort, where they have actually put the new Ten Commandments, which is the Earth Charter. So we find this Luciferian counterfeit, you know, of actually already constructed. You can see pictures of it up at the Internet. I'm sure you're well acquainted with that. And certainly Mikhail Gorbachev is almost the prototype of the person who comes from the dark side, talking about how the Earth Charter will become the new Ten Commandments for the world, as does Marie Strong. These two men have written a document which they feel will replace the Ten Commandments of God, and they have built an Ark of Hope, which will replace the Ark of the Covenant. Where does that fit into what's going on?
Well, it's amazing that this is being accepted by the world at the same time the Ten Commandments are being rejected by the world.
Well, it really is. It's so ridiculous. Where is the outcry from the Christian church?
Well, we've all been into this theory that there must be a separation of church and state, and that Congress is not, that we're not allowed to embrace any religious values, that we have to be a totally godless state. And that was never the intent of the separation of church and state clause whatsoever, but the atheists have been very successful in perpetrating this. It's time for God's people to reestablish the truth, because this cannot succeed unless the American populace becomes backslidden and lukewarm to it. That's the only reason these types of things can succeed.
And that's exactly what's going on today. And for our listeners out there who are unacquainted with the Earth Charter, go up on the Internet and Google in Earth Charter, and then Google in the Ark of Hope, and you'll actually see pictures of it there. It's all slam dunk. It's all accomplished. It's been circulated and traveled throughout the world in preparation for going to its final resting place. Where I think that's probably at the United Nations for the time being, but would they like to put that into the new temple? Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because, you know, this new temple is certainly going to have to be built. Now, were they talking at all about building a temple when you were over there?
Well, they weren't, but since I've gotten back, the Sanhedrin has been reformed, and they're now discussing where the temple has to stand. And they're also decided now to prefabricate it, like they did the first temple. There will not be the sound of hammer. There will not be the sound of the chisel. They've already made the announcement they're going to prefabricate the building of the third temple.
We're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty, and don't even think about changing the dial. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Irvin Baxter, and we're talking about, the end times. And endtime.org is his website, and the End Time magazine. And then, of course, you can go to 1-800-END-TIME if you'd like to get in touch with their ministry. And I'm sure they're getting out fabulous information about what's going on, and, the fact that they've actually reconvened the Sanhedrin. Now, has the Sanhedrin existed the last 2,000 years?
Yes, Dr. Stan, before I address that, the website is actually endtime.com.
Oh, I'm sorry, endtime.com, so please get that. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
What about the Sanhedrin?
Well, Maimonides, who lived in the 11th century and is considered the foremost Jewish teacher of the last 2,000 years, prophesied that when the Jewish people were returned to their land, but before all the Jews came home, the Sanhedrin would be reborn. Now, the Sanhedrin, of course, is that council that put Jesus Christ on trial, put the apostles on trial, and it was disbanded in 425 A.D. Maimonides lived about 700 years after that, but spoke of the reestablishment of the Sanhedrin. And he said once the Sanhedrin was reborn, that Elijah would appear before the reconstituted Sanhedrin and announce the identity of the Messiah. Well, on October the 13th of 2004, the Sanhedrin was reborn, and they have now become the driving force behind the plans to prefabricate the temple. I received their bulletin in June of this year, and they stated that they're now collecting money, and they're going to start collecting the materials for the building of Israel's third temple, and that's being planned right now.
And so they would be able to actually put that up within a relatively few weeks once they have all the various parts together.
Yes, that's correct. I talked to Rabbi Haim Richman, who is one of the 70 members of the Sanhedrin, and he's the executive director of the Temple Institute. And a few years back, before they had this prefabrication plan, he told me they could build the temple in less than 1 year with modern technology. But like you say, if they had everything prefabbed and pre-cut, it would be even faster than that.
All right, so we see exciting things happening from that point of view. But you talked earlier about this great war that is prophesied, and certainly I can see this whole thing unfolding. Our leaders are doing everything they can to inflame the Muslims of the world, who had been living in peace with Christianity for many years, you know. But now, of course, everything is being done to antagonize them, to draw them in, to recruit them into the radical form of Islam. I believe in preparation for the coming war. It really doesn't make sense unless there is another agenda. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Irvin Baxter, and we're talking about really what's going on in the Middle East, really what's going on in so many places in our society. But you talk about this war. Now, where is this war prophesied? Certainly we know Ezekiel 38 and 39. Is this the war you're talking about, or is it perhaps another war?
It's another war, actually. Ezekiel 38 and 39, in my opinion, is the Battle of Armageddon.
All right, fine.
But this war happens before the Great Tribulation begins, according to the passage. In Revelation 9:13-16, it says there are four angels bound in the great river Euphrates, which were prepared for an hour, a day, a month, and a year for to slay the third part of men. Now, angels in the Bible are spirits, the Bible tells us. And so consequently, I believe that these are the spirits of militant Islam. The Euphrates River is almost completely in the nation of Iraq. We have 150,000 troops stationed along Iraq tonight. It looks like to me we probably have already started this war. Now, President Bush, the war that he has launched in Iraq was predetermined long before 9/11, because he believes that there will be a new world order established. The only question is, will it be established through the United Nations, or will it be established with United States leadership? He stated that we would either remake the world in America's image, or the world would remake America in its image. Therefore, he, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and others believe we must dominate the world, remake it in our image, and Iraq was one of the big efforts to do that, because you go in, you break the back of the stranglehold of the Arabs on the oil, you also protect Israel at the exact same time, and it appears to me that that's what is happening. Now, President Bush undoubtedly feels that it's the right thing to do, and it would not be difficult to agree with him in some regard concerning that. However, we're on a dead-end collision course with the forces that want one world government through the United Nations. They've worked for many years to get there. Now Bush and company appears to be a threat to that. It looks like there's going to be a clash, and that clash is going to kill 2 billion human beings.
Well, the interesting thing is, if we see what's happening in the relationship between the United States and Iran, I mean, Iran, first of all, has elected a very, very, very militant, people might call him a nationalist, Iranian nationalist, who really adheres to the traditional radical beliefs of Islam. And he seems to be doing everything he can to antagonize the United States and to antagonize Europe. Now, from a logical point of view, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, if I were the ruler of Iran today, I would be doing everything I could to talk and talk and talk and negotiate and negotiate and negotiate ad nauseum. I wouldn't say I'm going to break off relationships with Europe, and we're going to go ahead and develop our nuclear technology, irrespective of how you and the United States feel. I mean, if I was the ruler of Iraq, of course, not as a Christian, but as a Muslim leader, I would secretly go ahead with my uranium enrichment, but I wouldn't admit to that. So it would appear that everything that is being done doesn't make any sense. Why would you flaunt the United States? Why would you defy Europe? Why would you try to align everybody in the world against you unless you were inviting an attack? Have you ever had that thought?
Well, I have, and I have an opinion. I'm not sure it's the correct opinion.
Well, I'd like to know what you think.
Iran, the believes that the Muslim religion is destined to rule the world, and therefore they have as much right to nuclear weapons as Israel. It's an open secret that Israel has a significant nuclear arsenal. And so they say to the international community, why should Israel be allowed to have nuclear weapons, and yet you're threatening us because we have not nearly as much as Israel has? You're not playing fair-handedly. You're continuing your partiality toward the nation of Israel. And that argument resonates with a lot of people throughout Europe, and even the United States has difficulty arguing against that. Now, the problem is you've got this specter of Islam who believes that it is to rule the world, and they believe it so strongly that many of them are willing to die to propagate that, to make it happen. So it appears that we're on a collision course here, and President Bush continually tries to say that the war against terror is not a war against Islam, and yet all the suicide bombers, almost 100% of them, are Islamic, and most of the people we are killing today are Islamic. So we find ourselves in this unenviable position of trying to say we're not making a religious war, and yet it certainly looks like one.
Well, did you anticipate war with Iran? In other words, a nuclear war or nuclear exchange with Iran?
I really do not, and I'll tell you why. The Bible specifically states Iran will be a part of the invasion of Israel at the Battle of Armageddon. And so consequently, I tend to think that Iran will probably not be involved in a nuclear war because she has to retain enough significance to come down with Russia. There in Ezekiel chapter number 38, it specifically states that when Meshach, which is the root word for Moscow, comes down against Israel at Armageddon, that the nation of Persia will be with her. Well, Persia is Iran. So I doubt seriously that Iran's going to be in a nuclear war prior to that time.
Well, then, what do you think this war that you're talking about in Revelation 9 will involve? What countries will be involved in, and will it be a nuclear exchange?
It will have to be a nuclear exchange. You cannot kill 2 billion human beings without a nuclear exchange. I think what will probably happen is that the Islamic world is going to keep pushing, and also there are reports now that Al-Qaeda has nuclear weaponry possibly smuggled into the United States. China is licking her chops, wanting to move against Taiwan, and if she feels like we're pinned down enough in Iraq, and if the time is right, she feels like that she could move against Taiwan because we would not have the adequate army to fight two wars on two fronts. That would force President Bush to then say, back off or we're going to nuke you, and then if China doesn't back off, if we do that, we unleash a nuclear holocaust. And if you've got 1.3 billion Chinese that we would wipe out, and we do have the ability to do that, that immediately would take us well over halfway toward killing 2 billion human beings, which is what the Bible prophesies.
But of course, if that should, I mean, China could lose, 600 million people, and it would not hurt China. If we lost, 50 million people in America, this would devastate and destroy our nation.
Well, we've seen what happened with New Orleans and the recent catastrophe there. Multiply that by many, many, many times, and it definitely, like you say, would cripple this nation, and it appears to me that that's probably where we're headed. Some way we have to explain how the center of world power swings back to Europe, which the Bible specifically prophesies that it will. So apparently America either draws into isolationism or else we're greatly weakened by the conflict, and we will be involved in this war that kills 2 billion people. We're the only nation with adequate firepower to do that. I personally believe it's very likely this war will happen yet in the Bush administration. I can't predict that with absolute certainty, but there are many reasons why I tend to believe that will happen.
Well, if we look at things chronologically in the Revelation, Why, of course, we have a Revelation 6:8 where the fourth horseman of the apocalypse is unleashed, and of course Hades follows far close behind, and power is given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world by the sword and by pestilence and by death, by famine and by and certainly by the beasts of the earth. So do you anticipate that will occur before Revelation 9? Or is there any chronology there in that prophetic book?
Yes, I do believe that will occur before Revelation 9. Here's the way I see the chronology of the book of Revelation. I see the seals as being the long story ending at Armageddon. If you look closely at the sixth and seventh seal, that's when the great day of God's wrath has come. That's when the heavens depart like a scroll. I believe that's Armageddon. And then when you back up and go through the trumpets, they're the shorter story, also ending at Armageddon. And then the vials are the real short story, ending at the Battle of Armageddon. I do not see the book of Revelation being in chronological order from front to back, but I see it being in an order, like the Gospels have four different accounts of the life and teachings of Jesus Christ. I believe that there are different accounts. That's the reason you see the destruction of Babylon several times. It's not that there are several Babylons and several destructions. It's because as you're teaching through, that you start the story over and teach it in another way, and then you teach it another way. And that's personally the way I see the book of Revelation unfolding.
In other words, you see basically what's described in Revelation 6 going right along with what's described in Revelation 9?
Well, not exactly. I believe the seals are the much longer story. For example, I believe that the death horse rider probably was unleashed in the 20th century. The 20th century was the bloodiest century of mankind. Prior to the 20th century, there had never been one war with 1 million fatalities. And yet in the 20th century, we had World War I with 8.2 million. And then 20 years later, World War II with 52 million. In the meantime, China was killing 60 million in their cultural revolution. Stalin killed 20 million in his political upheaval. And then abortion came in and killed 125 million. Altogether, we had 300 million. The Economist magazine called it the bloodiest century in the history of the world. So I tend to think that with the AIDS epidemic and all the other things that are happening, that death rider probably is now loose in the earth.
You think that this is unfolding today?
Yes, I do, and then I think that the trumpets run concurrently. We have a video we put out called The Seven Trumpets, and we believe that we can prove in the seven trumpets that many of the things that are prophesied there, some of them have happened. The one concerning this war that's going to kill one-third of mankind has not happened yet. It looks like to me that it's the next thing to happen on the end time agenda, and you can prove that it has to happen before the Great Tribulation begins, because in Revelation 9 you have this war, then in Revelation 10 you have this man standing with one foot on the land, one foot on the sea, declaring that delay shall be no longer, and then you immediately move into chapter 11 into the final 3.5 years, which I believe is the Great Tribulation period.
Well, did you have a position on pre, mid, or post-tribulation? Do you have a position on that?
I do have a position on that, Dr. Stan, and it's not a very popular position. My parents were ministers, and they believed in a pre-tribulation rapture, and I taught that when I began my ministry. But I hit some scriptures that caused me big problems, and I have changed my mind now. I do believe that the rapture happens at the end of the tribulation, not at the beginning.
Well, this is one of those things that I don't even like to get into at all. I always think of Walter Martin's wonderful remark. He said, of course, Walter Martin, the Bible Answer Man, had studied this for many years, and he commented that, you know, he'd read the scriptures through, studied them many times, and he just certainly found nothing there that convinced him there was going to be a pre-tribulation rapture, but he prayed he was wrong. And I think that pretty well assesses it. I don't take a position because I think it has nothing to do with salvation. I think it's fascinating to contemplate, but I think it can create tremendous neutrality in people. Well, I don't have to be concerned about anything because I'm going to be whisked away before anything bad happens. And I hope they're right. But what happens if they're wrong? And what happens, what will that do to the faith of the people? And I think this is what happened in Germany during the Second World War. That's why the churches are empty in so much of Europe, because, of course, the people there were misled by their leaders.
And there's only 3.5 years, in my opinion, that separate the two positions. And so it's not enough to squabble over. But the one thing, as you say, that we must say, is be also ready, because any of us could get hit by a Mack truck tonight.
Amen to that. And, of course, it could happen at any time. And, of course, that old saying, you know, what happens if you were to die tonight and you were to stand before the gates of heaven? What would you say to, you know, as to why you should enter? And are you prepared for death? And I think that certainly we live in very uncertain times. I think most people have become so accustomed to living in this wonderful, affluent society, they really never thought about eternity and what lies ahead.
Well, there is a wake-up call already starting to happen in America. I personally believe when this war hits, we probably are going to be injured pretty badly, and it will either be a curse upon us, or perhaps it will be a wake-up call, and we can see the revival that we need to have here in America. We, you know, right while the World Church is forming and the ecumenical movement is trying to bring everyone together on the basis of compromise, I believe there's another hunger in people saying, take me back to biblical Christianity, and that's where we really need to be.
And I believe you're absolutely right. I think that perhaps what we're doing now is simply sowing the seeds that hopefully will germinate and then come to life when the terrible times come. But, you know, your ministry is very, very similar to mine, because we don't spend as much time with prophecy, mainly because we don't know it as well as you do. I'm a retired orthopedic surgeon, not a theologian, but certainly I think what you're doing is so vitally, vitally important. It's a calling to people to look and read the scriptures and find that so many of the answers to the problems that face us today will not be found, you know, certainly by reading our newspapers or by studying contemporary history, but within the pages of the Holy Scriptures.
You know, Daniel said that he understood by reading of books the 70 years prophesied by Jeremiah the prophet, and I believe the same thing is true today. When Daniel finished his writings in chapter 12, verse 9, he was praying to understand his own writings, and the Lord said, "Go thy way, Daniel. The words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." So in 600 B.C., God made a sovereign decision that he would hide the understanding of end-time prophecy until the people of the time of the end. I'm convinced that we are that people, and therefore we are understanding things that have never been understood before, not because we're more spiritual or more intelligent, but because God decreed that he would place end-time prophetic understanding in the hands of the end-time church, and I believe he intends for it to generate one last great end-time revival.
Well, I certainly hope and pray you're right. Certainly, there's never been a time before when the children of Israel had returned to the Holy Land. There'd never been a time before where we could have everybody classified, everybody charted, everybody have a number, and the time would be when you'd be not able to buy or sell unless you had the mark, or certainly known by the number of the name of the devil and the Antichrist, and that number then would be 666. So many of these things, as we see them unfolding, you know, there has to be part of a plan. So many things don't make sense, but I really think that if you know the scriptures, if you read the scriptures, why so much of this is going to become apparent. One more time, would you like to get your telephone number out and your website?
Certainly would. The number is 800-END-TIME, E-N-D-T-I-M-E, and the website is endtime.com.
Okay, God bless. And just hang on, we got just a few minutes more. Well, we've got 3 minutes before I have to let you go. So how would you like to conclude the program this evening?
Well, you know, when Jesus sent his disciples out to preach, he always told them, go preach the gospel of the kingdom and heal the sick. And the gospel of the kingdom, many people, even Christians, don't really have an understanding of what that is. But in a nutshell, the gospel of the kingdom is simply the message that mankind does not know how to rule himself, and we live in the days of human government, but Jesus Christ will soon come and establish a kingdom that will never pass away and never be destroyed. And then the world will be filled with righteousness, Men will learn war no more. The lion and the lamb will lie down together. So that's the message of the coming kingdom of Jesus Christ. And that's our hope. If a person is going to have any hope, he will find it in that message. And Jesus said, except a man is born again, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. So it should be the ambition of every person, in my opinion, to know they're standing with Jesus Christ, to know they're born again, and to be ready for this promise, this wonderful promise lying just ahead of us now, I believe, the second coming of Jesus Christ, when he will reign as King of Kings and Lord of Lords.
Well, I appreciate everything you said this evening, and I certainly appreciate knowing that your ministry is out there, and of course, it's reaching people out across the land. And what time of day is your program?
Our live time is 3 to 4 in the afternoon. There are some of the stations that don't carry us on that live time, but many of them do. We're on major stations in New York City, Dallas, Texas, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Milwaukee, Detroit, Chicago. So we are available in many of the large metropolitan areas, and we're also available on the web. They just go there and click on politics or religion, and they can listen to the program there.
And do you take calls during the program?
Yes, we do. We take live call-ins.
All right. Well, I think that's really an exciting way to do it. In fact, we do three other hours during the daytime. When we do take calls, don't take calls this evening, I didn't want to, because I really wanted to have an opportunity to get your ideas out there. And of course, this program is then rebroadcast on a number of stations in the Midwest a couple of weeks from now. So I want to thank you so very much for being with us, and I hope perhaps we could call on you again in the not-too-distant future to keep us abreast of your views of the unfolding of events, because these are truly exciting, terrifying, and yet very gratifying times we live in.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. What a privilege to be with you.
God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
And, of course, our guest this evening has been Irvin Baxter of the End Time Ministries, and he's doing a great job reaching people all across America in times like this. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out 5 hours a day on radio and the Internet and shortwave and certainly by satellite across America, across the world, trying to make people understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being carried out on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. But it really is a spiritual battle. And if you read these scriptures, you begin to see the unfolding of events, and lots of things really don't make sense unless you understand that there is another agenda behind what's going on. And as I said, the internationalists and the Marie Strongs and Mikhail Gorbachev of the world, they have an agenda. And the communists have an agenda. And the Luciferian occult hierarchy we write of has an agenda. And God has an agenda. And as you begin to see all of these, of course, being played out, and you realize, of course, that God is sovereign, and he will influence and control the end of this story. Well, we hope that many of you will certainly go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, where you can hear our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, either directly there or linking to our other websites. You can listen to our archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters, and please feel free to do that. And we appreciate if you'd tell others about our station. We want to remind you that we are having an annual conference here in Santa Cruz. We have one every year. This year it's going to be on the 19th of November. And we've got great speakers lined up. And so we hope many of you out across America can come, or if you're living here in the Monterey Bay area, why, of course, you should know what a beautiful spot this is for a conference. It's going to be the Aptos Seascape Conference Center, marked the 19th of November. And if you're going to be able to come, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And certainly I think you'll find it'll be well worthwhile. And as we begin looking and seeing what's going on and talking about what the future will hold, and coming to understand the true nature of so much of what's going on today, which tragically most people have no idea what's happening. So we like to think that the people who listen to our programs are the elite of the alert, the people who understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. So again, our website is www.radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Let me suggest The Occult Hierarchy Part 2, and as you read this, you're going to say, this really couldn't be true. Now, this sort of thing really couldn't exist in the world, because if it did, Rush Limbaugh would tell us about it. Well, let me suggest these things do exist. The documentation for everything we say is there. And we'll give you the reference to the book, some of which we carry, written by people on the other side who are in contact with the other dimension, with a truly spiritual dimension, but the spiritual dimension from the dark side. So if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. And Martin Luther wrote, "And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, we will not fear, for God hath willed his truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word shall fell him." That word above all earthly powers, no thanks to them abideth. The spirit and the gifts are ours through him who with us sideth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever.